welcome to another episode of the Revolution Health Radio Show. This show is brought to you by ChrisCresser.com. I'm your host, Steve Wright from SCDLifestyle.com, and with me is integrative medical practitioner and New York Times bestseller and gorgeous man right there, Chris Cresser. What's up, video?
Hey, Steve, how you doing? Pretty exciting, huh? Do you like my high-tech background here?
Yeah, I think you should get some pictures or something.
Yeah, in my foam cave. This is what makes the audio so good. We finally figured it out, but it's not aesthetically that pleasing. So you're just going to have to deal for now with this rather utilitarian looking background. But it's all in the name of production quality.
So it's all for the listeners.
Yeah, your background is much nicer, Steve.
Yeah, I'm blessed with this room right here that mostly just contains a bookshelf and a window.
That's perfect. Built for video.
So it is.
Yeah, we've been transitioning to this new format, as I'm sure people have noticed. So we're going to start doing video for you YouTube watchers out there. And we're doing somewhat shorter episodes typically that are focused on a single topic. And these are going to be really driven by your questions. So we have a new format for submitting those questions. If you go to chriscresser.com/podcast question, there's a little button you can hit to record a voice question. And then we're going to, you know, sift through those and I'll pick a question to answer each week and we'll play back your voice question at the beginning of the episode. And I like that. I like that because it's, you know, your voices will be included and heard in the show. And I think it'll be great to do it that way. And most episodes will be maybe 30 minutes. Of course, if we do an interview, we'll probably do longer episodes, but we're going to try this out and see how it works. And let us know what you think of the new format.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited about the new format. And before we get to this week's listener speak pipe question, just want to let everybody know that if you didn't see it, Chris just invested a whole lot more time and energy into his website and made it even easier now to navigate around. Personally, Chris, I like the new design for sure. And if you go to chriscresser.com, you'll see a big, you know, Chris Cresser picture. And then right to the right of that is an opt-in box for Chris's 9 Steps to Perfect Health ebook. It's a 63-page ebook that has 9 different steps that if you haven't started to think about or implement in your life, I would definitely recommend that you get it and start to think about these things. Don't probably try all 9 at once, but definitely get started one at a time. So I think as of now, Chris, what there was over 106,000 people that have kind of already opted in for this type of ebook. So it's a pretty powerful ebook.
Yeah, it's kind of my top tips for optimizing your health, you know, especially for people who are pretty new to it. I cover the basics on diet and nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress management, supplementing wisely, and some of the other lifestyle stuff that we've talked about a lot on the show and I've written about on the blog. So it's a really excellent primer for yourself or for anybody that you know that's getting started with this stuff.
Yeah, so check it out if you haven't. And now we'll play this week's question.
Hi, Chris. Our 12-month-old breastfed daughter has been suffering from recurrent ear infections over the last 7 months. Do you have any advice on what we can do to boost her immune system and stop these continually appearing? Also, we'd love to know your thoughts on the use of grommets as a way of preventing ear infections. Thanks.
So the question is, it was a woman from Australia, I think, judging by her accent, and she has a 12-month-old baby, breastfed baby, that is getting recurrent ear infections, and she's wondering what to do about that. And then she specifically asked about grommets as a potential remedy. These are ear tubes, tiny tubes that are put into the eardrum when kids are having chronic ear infections. So this is a great question, and it actually leads to several other questions and an interesting discussion. So I thought it would be a good topic to cover on this show. You know, if you have a kid and your kid gets an ear infection, you take him or her to the doctor, chances are you're going to walk out of there with a prescription for an antibiotic. And for many years, researchers thought and doctors thought that ear infections were primarily bacterial, which is why they prescribed antibiotics. But we now know that 80% of ear infections are viral in origin, not bacterial, and they'll actually resolve within 4 to 7 days without any antibiotic treatment at all. This is clear in the research. Unfortunately, the memo hasn't really gotten out because most doctors are still prescribing antibiotics and most parents are still asking for them. So I know of some doctors who are aware of this, but it's very difficult for them not to prescribe antibiotics because the parents are really distressed. If you've ever been around a small child with an ear infection, you know that they're really painful and difficult, and it's hard as a parent to witness that and not know what to do and feel like you're powerless. So I certainly don't blame parents for wanting to alleviate the suffering of their children. The problem is, as I just mentioned, in fewer than 2 out of 10 times, the antibiotic will, the antibiotic won't be helpful 80% of the time, and it only worked 20% of the time, and that's a pretty big risk you're taking to take an antibiotic when there's only a 2 in 10 chance that it will work. If antibiotics were harmless, as we originally thought they were, it wouldn't be a big deal, right? But we know that they're not harmless, and ironically, taking antibiotics is actually going to increase the risk of getting future ear infections because it disrupts the microbiome, which makes the child more susceptible to future ear infections. So it becomes almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, antibiotic for ear infection, more ear infections, more antibiotics, and kids really just get stuck in this loop.
What about those other 2 times though, Chris? Is there a risk for, just playing the other side of the coin here, is there a risk to the 2 times when it would have worked?
There is a risk, and that's why this is such a difficult problem, because there can be complications from middle ear infections. They can go deeper and they can cause all kinds of problems. And so, up until recently, I think the thinking, even for doctors who knew about this virus, that most of them are viral, is hey, there is a chance of complications if it isn't treated, so we'll just prescribe the antibiotic and deal with that in case it is bacterial, and if it's not, no big deal. But again, the problem is it is a big deal. It's a much bigger deal than we ever thought it was, and we're only now beginning to understand the extent to which it's a big deal. So in an ideal world, we'd have like a rapid culture where the doctor could just, take an immediate culture to figure out right there in the office if it's viral or bacterial. And even if it's bacterial, what kind of bacteria it is, so that they can prescribe a narrow spectrum antibiotic that just deals with that particular form of bacteria instead of a broad spectrum antibiotic that's going to wipe everything out. Because typically the antibiotics they prescribe for these things are broad spectrum because they don't know what bacteria is causing it. So that's ideal, but we're not there yet. And the development of that kind of culture method has been slow. And, I think it's possible, but it's really expensive, and it's going to be a while before we get to that point. So the recommendation that I think makes the most sense to me is to monitor closely, to try some of the things we're going to talk about that are alternative treatments for ear infections that get more at the viral cause, and just monitor closely. So if you see your child getting worse and not responding to any of these treatments, then you go back to the doctor, and then you can consider an antibiotic to prevent complications. But that would lead to far, far fewer antibiotic prescriptions, because as I said, most of these resolve within 4 to 7 days without antibiotics, and they don't get progressively worse. It's a huge problem. The average American child has received 3 courses of antibiotics in their first 2 years of life. And then they go on to receive another 8 courses of antibiotics over the next 8 years, 17 courses of antibiotics before the age of 20, and 30 courses of antibiotics before the age of 40.
That's average?
This is average. So, of course, some people are much higher than that, and other people are lower. But to have an average of 30 courses of antibiotics before 40 is totally catastrophic. I think I mentioned Martin Blaser's new book. Dr. Blaser, real pioneer in the field of microbiome research. His book's called Missing Microbes, and it details the the consequences of overuse of antibiotics. And frankly, I mean, it's a fantastic book. It scared the hell out of me. You know, it was like, it really brought, there are things I've been aware of for a long time, but to see it all in one place and see all the statistics and to really consider the possibly permanent changes to the human race.
Wow.
You know, this, we're talking about that level of significance because we're changing our microbiome in such a way that, you know, and we know now that we pass our microbiomes down to our children. So if we change, eliminate certain species of gut flora that have been living in our guts for, you know, millions of years or hundreds of thousands of generations, and we wipe them out, we've permanently changed essentially what it means to be human. Because, you know, we have 10 times more bacterial cells than we do human cells. So it's a big deal. And it doesn't mean that, you know, antibiotics aren't necessary. They're life-saving. They have to be used in certain cases, and we should continue to use them for those cases. But what we should not do is prescribe them indiscriminately in situations where they're not likely to be effective. And if we just change that alone, it would have a huge difference on the number of prescriptions. And in fact, there are other industrial countries that have much better healthcare than us in terms of rankings. And when you look at infant mortality and all the objective measures, like Sweden, for example, and Denmark, and their prescription of antibiotics is way, way lower than ours. So it's definitely possible to have, you know, really high quality healthcare without a lot of antibiotic use. So one of the causes of chronic viral infections, ear infections in kids can be antibiotic use. You know, if a child received antibiotics when they were young, maybe a C-section birth or an initial infection or something like that, that can disrupt the gut flora and predispose them becoming more susceptible to ear infections as they get older. Food allergies. This is really interesting. I did some research on this recently, and studies show between 45 and 80% of kids with recurring ear infections have food allergies. So in other words, you know, it's more likely than not that a food allergy is at the root of the chronic ear infections. So the most typical would be to gluten, dairy products, soy, peanuts, and, you know, some of the non-gluten grains. And we'll talk a little bit about what to do about that when we get to that section.
That's fascinating that, you know, we know that from the research also that antibiotic usage predisposes to leaky gut. So that's obviously the connection, yep. One of the connections, yep. Here anyways. But just changing our diets that we give to the kids, you know, potentially could stop these cycles. Because I have several friends who babies are stuck in these cycles, and I wish they listened to the show.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, it's like in the mainstream, it's often, there's still this idea that food doesn't matter that much for things like this, which is kind of preposterous. But, so the food allergies, I think, contribute via leaky gut, like you said, Steve, and then just they activate the immune system and cause this immune dysregulation, which then makes us more susceptible to viral infections, which are the cause of most ear infections. Another related cause of ear infections would be disrupted gut microbiome. I talked about that in the context of antibiotics. So lack of beneficial bacteria because, you know, the breast milk isn't sufficient in that regard, or because the baby's consuming formula, which is not the case in for the questioner, but it, you know, is definitely an issue, potential issue. If the baby was born via C-section rather than vaginally, we know now that the initial exposure to bacteria happens in the birth canal. And whereas if you have a C-section birth, the initial exposure for the baby to bacteria is actually just to the hospital bacteria, which is obviously not as desirable as the mother's bacteria in the birth canal. And 1 in 3 births now in the U.S. are C-section births.
Wow.
So this is
that's crazy. But also what I just thought of is I'm picturing this idea that we're changing the gut flora forever. And I'm thinking about the the different third world countries and the hunter-gatherer tribes that are still alive, and the fact that I don't have any kids yet, but all of the babies that I've ever seen are like wrapped in the most non-microbe environment ever. Like if some dirt or something ever got in on a newborn, I think everyone would freak out, including myself, and be like, oh, that's weird. But, you know, in a different time and age, these babies would have been exposed to soil-based organisms right away.
Absolutely. Right away. And they would have, and they were certainly born vaginally, and they were breastfed 100% of the time. And so, a much different environment. So that's another possibility. And we know that 75 to 80% of the immune cells in the body are in the gut. So if you have changes to your gut microbiome, that's absolutely going to affect immunity and your ability to fight off these ear infections. Another problem that can predispose to ear infections is low vitamin D levels. And there was one study I found that showed that of 116 kids, and on average, they had low vitamin D levels. So the norm in the study was that kids' vitamin D level was 27 or something, which is below the commonly recognized range of 30. Now that range is somewhat controversial, and I think that you can make an argument that 27 may not be a problem, especially in kids that young. But we know if that's the average, that a lot of kids had levels of, 15, 18, 20. And that, that's definitely an issue because vitamin D plays such an important role in regulating immune function. So those are a few of the causes and things that can increase the susceptibility to chronic and recurring ear infections. So obviously, now we're going to start talking about treatment, and of course, we're going to be thinking about it in terms of all of these causes. So the goals are, we want to eliminate any food triggers that could be contributing to these recurring infections, since the food allergies are a factor in many, if not most, cases of recurring ear infections. We want to fix the gut, improve levels of beneficial bacteria. And we want to strengthen the immune system, and then also even consider what some botanical or herbal alternatives to antibiotics might be that can be used either internally or topically.
And we got to do this with an infant that's been having, or a newborn who's been having, multiple infections and may or may not already have tubes in their ears. So
that's right. So the first step would be an elimination diet. So a 12 months old baby is probably eating some solid food now, maybe probably not too much. Depending on how you've done it. But if baby is eating solid food, then you definitely would want to remove gluten, dairy, soy, peanuts, and probably all grains from baby's diet for a period of time to see how they respond and if this makes a difference. If breastfeeding is still happening a lot, which it sounds like it was, then it probably makes sense for mom to remove those foods from her diet for a period of time. We don't have a lot of research on how much of these proteins get through the breast milk into the child's belly. But I know anecdotally from working with a lot of moms that changes in mom's diet absolutely do affect baby when they're breastfeeding. So I think it definitely makes sense to do that. The second thing is a nasal spray called Xclear. It's X-L-E-A-R. And this is a xylitol-based nasal spray. Xylitol is a sugar alcohol that breaks down biofilm. And in a lot of cases of any kind of chronic viral infections, what happens is chronic infections in general, the biofilm forms, and it makes it really hard for the immune system to get rid of whatever is in that biofilm. And so xylitol actually breaks up the biofilm and makes it easier for our immune system to deal with those pathogens. So you can use the Xclear nasal spray. If you go to the website, there's some directions on how to do that. In terms of alternative to antibiotic eardrops and internal antibiotics, there's a garlic and mullein oil. It's sold in a bottle, a small bottle. I think it's mixed in a base of olive oil, and there's garlic and mullein, which are both antimicrobial, and mullein in particular has a soothing effect on the ear. So you can put a few drops of this oil, you warm it up slightly, put it in a pan with some hot water so it warms up, and you can put some drops of oil in the ear, and that can be really effective. I actually have used that myself when I sometimes I have a condition called surfer's ear, where the bones in my ear have grown closer together because of too much exposure to cold water. And it means that sometimes if I'm surfing and I forget my earplugs, then my ear will tend to fill up with water and it doesn't drain properly, and then I can get an infection. And when I do, I use the garlic and mullein oil, and it works pretty well.
Nice. Is there a brand for that you trust?
I think Herb Farm makes one, but you know, there should be a few different options, and I don't think the brand matters quite as much in this case. So then we have things that are immune stimulants that can help build, you know, strengthen immunity, and that are safe to take even for relatively young kids, as long as you're using the kids' dosages. So there's elderberry and echinacea. Typically, these aren't, you know, most recommendations are not to give these to kids under 2 years old, but if you have an herbalist or a functional medicine practitioner that's experienced with treating kids, I think it's probably fine to do that under supervision. We've done that with Sylvie at times where if people around her, like her friends, were sick, just to help her fight off colds, and you know, it's I think safe if you use a low enough dose. So those are the Exclear, the garlic mullein oil, and then the echinacea and elderberry. Then we have, of course, vitamin C, which you can use up to 400 milligrams in a 1 to 3 year old child. I wouldn't exceed 400 milligrams. You have foods like bell peppers, papaya, guava, strawberries, kiwi, broccoli, kale, and other leafy greens that are high in vitamin C, and you can also supplement with vitamin C, and that can really strengthen the immune system. Fermented cod liver oil, our old friend, which always seems to come up in these discussions. The reason it's so potent for immunity is it has high levels of vitamin A, active retinol, which is the active form of vitamin A, which is very important for the immune system. It has vitamin D, which we just talked about. A lot of kids are low in it. It's got EPA and DHA, which are also helpful for the immune system. It's got some vitamin K2, which now we're understanding plays a role in immune function, and vitamin E and the various quinones. So it's a really kind of potent immune booster, and it's totally, cod liver oil was actually Sylvie's first real food other than breast milk. So you can start with that at 9 months, if not earlier, and certainly for a one-year-old, you could be using, you know, one milliliter, even 1.5 or 2 milliliters if during an active infection. You know, a lot of people, adults that I work with and kids, I hear from their parents, just adding cod liver oil to their routine, you know, sometimes dramatically reduces the frequency and severity of colds and flus and other kinds of infections. So then we have probiotics and prebiotics. So for probiotics, for kids under 2, it's important to use different products than you use with adults. So what you want to do is look for strains that are naturally in the gut of infants at that time. And Bifidobacteria infantis is the main one. There's a product in the U.S. called Therbiotic Infant that I like to prescribe for young kids under 2 years of age. Which is really effective. I'm not sure what if there's an Australian equivalent, but look for Bifidobacteria infantis as the most important strain. Of course, there are fermented foods too, if your child is old enough to eat them and will eat them. Sauerkraut was actually Sylvie's favorite food for a number of months early on. She absolutely loved it. I think that was the wisdom of her body speaking. If dairy turns out to not be a problem, there's dairy kefir. Water kefir is really great. Beet kvass, Kombucha, I don't find to be as therapeutic, but that, and it's a little bit sweeter, so that might not be the greatest idea. And then you can ferment just about any kinds of vegetables and even fruit. So there's a lot of leeway there to get more fermented foods into the diet. Prebiotics, though, have a greater impact over the long term in terms of increasing the levels of beneficial bacteria. Probiotics are immune regulators, and that's important, of course, when you're trying to address the immune system, but they don't quantitatively increase levels of beneficial bacteria over time. That's what prebiotics do. So you could use something like I have in my store. It's Prebiogen, so it's inulin, larch, arabinogalactin, and some other non-starch polysaccharides that selectively stimulate the growth of good bacteria. You could try a little bit of potato starch mixed with something, either yogurt if you tolerate dairy, or coconut milk or something like that. Go very slowly and take a lot less, or give your child a lot less than the adult dose. So for Prebiogen, that would be like less than, you know, maybe 1/16 of a teaspoon. They say start with a scoop on the jar, and that's a terrible idea. And the same for resistant starch, you know, any potato starch, start at a much lower dose and build up slowly over time.
It would seem like if they start playing around with these prebiotics that they should really monitor for increased gas, just in case they've already developed a SIBO infection or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if your child is 1 year old, they're not going to be able to tell you. So you're going to have to watch for pain and listen for changes in their digestion and observe for changes in their stools. Going back to probiotics, if your child is over 2 years old, I think soil-based organisms make a lot of sense for prevention, because some of the bacillus species bacteria, which are in soil-based organisms, have their particular claim to fame is their potency as immune regulators and stimulators. So bacillus species and soil-based organisms in general have a particular effect on immune function compared to other probiotic strains. So I think the soil-based organisms are important. So that's the program. That's a lot of stuff to focus on. I'm sure there'll be, well, I'm not sure, but I imagine there'll be something there that helps. And I sure hope so, because I know it can be really challenging to have these recurring infections. I want to address the question about grommets, aka ear tubes, quickly. So these are tiny tubes that are inserted into the eardrum under general anesthesia, and they usually stay in place for 6 months or a year, maybe longer. The reason they do it is the tubes help drain chronic ear fluid that builds up in these recurring ear infections, which is often referred to as glue ear. And that helps an ear infection from occurring again, because that glue, the fluid that builds up there, makes the kids more susceptible to recurring infections. And the other idea behind the tubes is if the child is having recurrent infections and they're not resolving, there's a potential, even though it's very rare, for chronic hearing loss to happen. And so the tubes are used to prevent that from happening. There are some risks, though. As with any surgery, that, you know, there's always risk, especially under general anesthesia, a fairly non-significant percentage of people have bad reactions to general anesthesia, and you know, the ear is a very delicate structure, so getting in there is potentially problematic. The tubes often leave a little scar that covers about 1/6 of the eardrum, and most doctors and researchers seem to think this isn't a problem, but the jury is still out. We don't really know, so you know, there's a question mark there. And then some studies show that the ear tubes don't actually work to prevent recurring ear infections. And some kids get just as many ear infections as they did when they didn't have the tubes. And this, I think, gets back to the importance of addressing the underlying problem. You know, so if you have a food allergy, if a kid is gluten intolerant and that's what's causing the immune activation, which is then predisposing to ear infections, then you know, using ear tubes is possibly going to help. But if the gluten is not taken out of the diet, then the underlying problem hasn't been addressed, and they'll just keep getting worse. So I would say ear tubes would be a last resort, and that trying all the things that we've talked about here would be the starting place.
Well, I think that's a lot of information. That's a lot of different steps to take. So,
yeah, I hope that was helpful, and I hope everyone's enjoying the new format. Please do let us know in the comment section. And remember to submit your voice questions, because that's what we're going to be doing now. And you can do that at chriskresser.com/podcast question. And please do keep the questions short, because, you know, we're going to be playing them back during the show. And, you know, it's not really possible for me to address individual health concerns anyways during the podcast. So keep it short and you know, somewhat general, so it can benefit everybody, and we'll do our best to answer them.
Yeah, awesome. And obviously, you know, you can always check us out, leave us a rating on iTunes, the Revolution Health page there. And in between these episodes, Chris always is sharing the studies and the books that he's consuming on Facebook and Twitter. So you can go to facebook.com/Chris Kresser, LAC, and then twitter.com/Chris Kresser. So
and Pinterest now. We're starting to beef up on our Pinterest presence.
I think we're going to put this on Pinterest right here.
This beautiful background. Maybe we can Photoshop it, me in like a jungle or something, or on the beach.
There we go.
My microphone. It is white, right? Someone can cut it out.
That's true.
All right, everybody. Thanks again. Good to see you and talk to you. We'll see you next week.